This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Herring, Neil. Chris Herring joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is the band's version, Arkansan Levon Helm on lead vocal, of Bob Dylan's When I Paint My Masterpiece. Huh. Send it out to John Morant, who painted one against the Milwaukee Bucks last night.
Yeah, that was really astonishing. I don't know. Like, you in your piece, and you can read Chris's piece at the Daily Memphian, just total control of the game, it felt like.
He had the whole thing on a string. I think that was one of the best total basketball games I've ever watched someone play live. And it wasn't, I mean, he's had games where he scored a lot more points. He had 50-point nights. He's had games where he's had massive dunks that break the internet. He didn't do that. But in terms of just total control of a basketball game, every second he was on the floor, he controlled the entire game. Every second of it. And it was something to see, man. He just had the whole game in his hand last night.
It was nuts. And obviously the butt pass was preposterous. Did you have any favorites? The butt pass would be number one. And I said earlier, you do this thing at the end of the year where you rank moments of the year. Do you do top 50, top 100? What's your typical approach here?
It varies. I've done as few as 10 and as many as 82.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see where it lands. It depends on what the season gives us, right?
I'm going to say there is no way that is not top 10, and I think it's an early favorite for top 5.
It's up to, we've had, even though it's been sort of a shaky start to the season, it's been pretty good in that regard. We had the opening night classic Ja game winner with the fancy dribble into Walker Kessler's chest.
Yeah.
We had the Jaren Jackson driving dish for the Jay Huff reverse dunk over two dudes. and then there's other stuff too. And then that one. But those three are all like really good, you know?
And even that one, I imagine the Marcus Smart to Jay Huff. If you do 82, it'll make it. You know, it'll be there. Yeah, we've had some spectacular moments. Ja was absolutely magnificent. Did you? I heard him and sent you the stuff on that he said to Fish. Did you hear Ja's comments after the game to the larger media crowd?
Yeah, I was in the locker room.
That's what I mean. Yeah, so, and how was he?
Yeah.
What was the spirit of it?
He was fine. He was more impressive playing basketball than talking after in the locker room. This is an essential like belief of mine. Media like that they get to go in the locker room and hear the guys, and like it's good you convey that to the fans. But the fans experience basketball by watching basketball. And to me, the expressiveness of players within the context of the game is richer and more important than their expressiveness in the locker room. So Ja was fine in the locker room. He had some good quotes. I put him in the story. But the show was on the floor.
As I said earlier in the show, the close textual analysis of Ja from two nights ago is, you know, as if it's Dostoevsky, is a little bit crazy to me. But I think part of the question was last night's performance in response or an expression in response to the frustration that he was feeling? And, I mean, obviously...
Yeah, it was a response to, like, we've lost two games in a row and the vibes are bad and, right. And I'm the best player and I'm the point guard and it's my responsibility to go get us back on track. Is what a response to. his play on the floor was a response to what had happened on the floor the two previous nights, right?
Yep.
The locker room stuff the night before, I guess, they was just way overblown. People overinterpreted it.
That is
both
my
in terms
view.
Of its importance and its meaning, you know? This idea that he was taking a shot at the coaches for not playing him enough, to me, people read into that because that's what they wanted to read into it. It was not remotely clear that that is what he meant, and I just don't think there was any there with that, really, in any meaningful way. But I think, you know, he had missed the game against Chicago, and then he had not played well, and the team had not played well, and, like, he wanted to right the ship for himself and for his team, and he did it.
I agree with all that. And, yeah, he'd also played – you're right. They lost to Brooklyn. He played badly in that game. He had not played particularly well in that game. And it was remarkable. It's just hey, exactly right. The game on a string. So the starting lineup, Santi, Jalen Wells, both played well. Did that those choices surprise you? Were they obvious choices? And thinking about going forward here, obviously we haven't had the report yet, the update, I don't think yet, on Desmond Bane, right?
Right. So I expected them to start Santi at the three. Obviously, they have limited options going into the game in terms of their players available to them. They've been playing Santi at the three in the flow of the game, and they've liked it. And so I expected them to go to Santi at the three to start. Now, the game before, Marcus Smart had gotten injured in the first half. So when they started the second half, they started with Conchar. I thought they might go back to that, but Conchar was not available to them. And so once he was not available, the Jalen Wells thing did not really surprise me. Jalen Wells has been just really impressive. I mean, he's had bad moments because he's a rookie. But for a second-round pick, rookie, and there is no reason to expect a single thing from a second-round pick rookie. Like, your expectations should be zero.
Right.
And he has been good. He's a real shooter who shoots with confidence. I think he has some issues defensively here and there, but he's 6'7", and he plays hard, and he plays smart most of the time. He certainly did last night. And I think they really found a real player with him, and that was a real impressive – his first NBA start, that was a real impressive game from him.
Yeah, they really found another player, it feels like, late in the draft.
Yeah.
Just amazing. He sees the floor much better than I expected, too. He'll have little, you know, clever little passes, sometimes too ambitious, but – And then he gets lost defensively, but I thought last night actually was really solid fighting over Pat. He started guarding Dame Lillard. Now, Dame may have his own struggles, you know.
It may have been. I gave Jalen Wells and Scottie Pippen credit for their good defense on Dame Lillard, and I think they did play good defense on Dame Lillard. But it's possible it's one of those nights where you and me could have doubled up on some Dame Lillard defense,
right.
You know.
God, that was amazing. All right, other good things. We did get the Santi every other good game thing. That was good. That was nice to see. Productive. As you pointed out in your piece, career high minutes for Zach Edey. What'd you think of his effort?
I thought that was the best game he's played all around. I know he's in games where he scored more. But in terms of being solid against, like, some tough matchups. I mean, that's Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo out there. I think he was not a disaster defensively. He had scored on some, but it was not a mess at all. It was not hurting them. I think they used his screening early in the game, which they haven't always done. Like, that flurry of points John Morant had early in the game, like, at least a couple of those were coming off Zach Edey screens. So they got him involved in that way. You know, he finished stuff around the basket. He had the good block on Lillard that got them going. And they were able to play him heavy minutes and it not be a problem. And I think he needs reps, you know. He's a rookie, too. And I think it's a bigger, even though he's a four-year guy and a higher drafted guy, I think stylistically it's a much bigger adjustment for him than it is for someone like Jalen Wells. And he just needs more time and more minutes. And that was a good 24 minutes from Zach Edey.
And he doesn't, I don't know if he's made a single hook or whatever, but he will. You know, he spent a whole career making hook shots, you know. So I those aren't falling now, but I think he will.
I think sort of, it's sort of, to me, it's similar to early preseason when it wasn't falling. And sort of, he had to sort of, like, get his rhythm and timing and patience and all that back. And the problem with that is that he's only going to get so many opportunities, right? Like, he's not going to get 7-8 of those a game. And so it's sort of harder to, like, get your rhythm and get your timing and adjust to the size of the defense and all that when you like get like two opportunities a game. But I think over time he is going to be more effective with that, yes.
Jake LaRavia is obviously going to be counted on during this stretch without the with the depleted wings. And it is interesting, his persona as a player is it's feisty. That's what Jake LaRavia is.
Yeah.
It's not shooter Jake LaRavia. It's feisty Jake LaRavia. It's sort of an interesting thing. And he was feisty and pretty good last night.
He's much more taller Conchar than taller Kennard. That is sort of what we found with him, right? Like, he's a guy who can make a shot. He's the ability to make threes, but he's not done it consistently. His game is really just playing all around basketball and hitting the boards and drawing, right, getting fouls and playing hard and being more of a glue guy kind of player. It is not the shooter that, you know, they wanted him to be. But like a 6'8 guy who like gets rebounds and plays hard, and that's a good guy to have, you know? He was a plus-minus monster last night. He actually had the best plus-minus in the game, not John Morant. I'd have to go back and look and see if he was, like, you know, handcuffed to Morant for a lot of those minutes. That may be the case. Or he was on the floor when Giannis Antetokounmpo was on the bench. But, you know, I think I've been saying this, and some people, like, scoff at it when he has bad shooting nights, but Jake LaRavia is a real player. He's become a real player. Now, should he be the 12th guy on a team, not the 7th guy on a team? That might be the case. But I think he's a real player. He's a role player who will be unrestricted free agent next summer.
So that choice, the Grizzlies did not pick up the option. And so what do you think is the reasoning there? That happened yesterday or didn't happen yesterday. What do you think is the reasoning there, and what do you think of it?
So it's not crystal clear to me. I don't know precisely what the reasoning is. I do think that was the rare. A lot of those decisions are obvious. Either like a guy can't play, and you decline it, or you don't pick it up, or a guy is part of your like rotation structure, and on a recontract, you definitely want that guy back. I think LaRavia was definitely in the jump ball territory of you could have gone either way on that, and it would be a reasonable decision. So it really is very much a debatable situation. You know, it's $5 million. I think on one hand, like in theory, it doesn't preclude them re-signing him. It's sort of like Luke Kennard. They declined the team option Luke Kennard and signed him to a different contract. I think they see that as a potential path with Jake LaRavia. I don't think it's a sign that they are done and they are 100% done with Jake LaRavia. I didn't. They put that out there. Like Drew reported that. They still have interest in him. They like him. So there's a chance that, you know, instead of having him next year for 1 year, $5 million, which is the option, they could sign him for a 2 or 3 year deal starting at $4 million or something, right? And shave a little bit off and have him longer. That's certainly a possibility. I also think, you know, you face into the decision with Santi Aldama, maybe you're re-signing him as a restricted free agent. You still have G.G. Jackson. They've had such success finding these guys on minimum contracts and locking them up that if Jake LaRavia at full strength is not, is your 11th, 12th guy, not your 7th, 8th, if you're at full strength.
Right.
Do they want to pay $5 million for the 12th guy when they think they can spend $2 million on a 12th guy, right? I think there's enough, you know, luxury tax concerns and the roster's deep enough that they just probably didn't want to lock themselves into $5 million on him. But there's risk in that, you know? He could be more than a $5 million player next summer.
Well, he's behind Vince, he's behind GG, he's behind Wells,
right.
You know, I guess,
right.
Go ahead. We may have just lost Chris. Chris is driving back to the Twin Cities, I'm presuming. A lot of miles on that car as we lose Chris. We'll revisit with Chris briefly, and then we've got Jeffrey's Betts. We'll talk a little college football coming up next. And then we've got Caleb Pedersen Sewell from 901 FC. Anyway, any other thoughts on that, on Jake?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I thought Missouri would be kinder to us on the call than Iowa was last week. I think what I'm sure when I went out, but I think what I was saying was he is playing, he's giving them good minutes right now, and he's playing a lot because of the injuries. But to your point, if they have all 15 players available at full strength, he's probably not a 10-man rotation guy. He's the 11th, 12th guy.
Right.
So, like, I can understand not wanting to lock up the 11th, 12th guy for more than a minimum. It's a defensible decision either way, really.
So, now he will play, presumably playing heavy minutes. What's the feeling about, we're waiting a word on Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart. We did see that Paolo Banchero out with a torn oblique. This is a strained oblique. Any thoughts on those looming injury reports?
What we know now is only the initial game night thing. I mean, we know that they have done on both injuries. We know they've done imaging yesterday. We have gotten the results of that. So I don't want to assume on the Bane thing. The Bane thing may be very minor. I don't know that it's not, you know, something more serious. I think we're going to find out. So it's a wait and see on that. They're going to have more players, assuming hopefully the stock of wood, they don't lose more. They're going to have more players coming soon. Conchar is night to night. So he'll be back. Luke Kennard has been cleared for full contact. Presumably he'll be back next week, you would hope. Hopefully we'll get some info on Vince Williams Jr. that will present an on-ramp to his return. But the Bane's the big one. Like, Smart's important too, but Bane's the big one, and we'll find out today, hopefully, what it's going to be. It certainly does not sound like the kind of thing that, like, a worst-case scenario is still, like, you know, you're going to get him back, you know, middle of the season in a worst-case scenario. So they're probably good enough that it's not going to be some, like, the season has fundamentally been altered, even in a bad-case scenario with him. But you'd sure like to get him back, you know, in a week or two instead of a month or two, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Paolo thing would be, he's evaluated in 4 to 6 weeks. That would put you behind a little. You'd have a lot of work to do in those 4 to 6 weeks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. There was a thing, one of the, like, the Jeff Stotts, the injury guy, had tweeted something out about, you know, injuries like this in the NBA. He had, like, players typically missed, like 5 games or something like that. And I saw that. I'm like, sold.
Yeah, I think it was 4.2 games, 11 days. Right, exactly.
Right, we'll
take that. You can muddle through. Sixers this weekend, thoughts?
There's been some suggestion that Embiid could be back this weekend. Embiid Edie, you know, would be interesting. I think the Grizzlies would Edie, hold off. Because that team is Tyrese Maxey and some dudes right now, and Tyrese Maxey and some dudes has not been very good. So I think the Grizzlies would be happy to say, you have Tyrese Maxey, we have Ja Morant, the rest of our dudes can take the rest of your dudes. I think the Grizzlies would take their chances with that.
Speaking of Tyrese Maxey and dudes, it was Giannis and some dudes last night. That was awful from the Bucks. I mean, magnificent from Giannis. He was Giannis, but they were dreadful.
Giannis was incredible.
Incredible.
Like, I mean, to see Ja Morant and Giannis and DeGobo both play games like that, I mean, he was terrifying. But that team is a mess. That team is it's a mess that they're not going to come back for them. I don't know whether they're going to trade Giannis or not. That's a bigger decision than just, like, our team's not good right now. That's a fundamental franchise situation. But I don't think that team is capable of being a top 6 team in the East. I don't think the roster is capable of that. I think that ship has already sailed, even with Giannis on it.
And then finally, Doc Rivers pregame brought up Tony Allen.
Yeah, unprompted, he came in and he started the question and answer with his own question. You know, he just wanted to know when Tony's retirement game was. I don't think he'll be in the building for it. He's probably going to be busy at that point. Assuming he's still the Milwaukee Bucks coach.
Right.
I mean, maybe he will have time on his hands. We'll see where it goes. But, you know, he went out of his way to say Tony Allen's one of his favorite players. So that was nice.
That's fun. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
I've saved. People can read Chris's piece at the Daily Memphian. We're going to do Jeffrey's Bets next. Take us through the world of college football. I'll remind you, though, every Friday night, FanDuel is giving all customers bigger payout on select NBA first bets. First bets, what are they? Well, they let you in to get on the action right from the very first, you know. So who will score the first basket? Which team will be the first to 15 points? So much more. Best of all, you don't have to wait the whole game to see if you won. Just look for Friday Firsts in the FanDuel app to find your profit boost. Visit FanDuel.com/Calkins, that's the promo code, to claim your Friday First profit boost. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. Opt-in required. Max wager amount applies. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including token expiration. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Well, that music means we're going to be talking about college football. Jeffrey's going to be giving you his wagers for the week. Reminder, O'Call, you can still get the hoodies, quarter zips in collegiate colors. You can still get in there and spruce yourself. I'm starting to think about my Thanksgiving celebrations, Jeffrey. Are you starting to think about your Thanksgiving?
I'm always thinking about Thanksgiving.
So you spruce yourself up for the holidays, but you can also spruce yourself up for the football weekends because O'Call continues to have in your collegiate colors, not with some big garish logos or something, but just a lovely, beautiful shade of orange, the official shade of orange that you can wear to support your Vols or your also colors for the Memphis Tigers. Arkansas, big weekend this weekend.
Absolutely.
Ole Miss, big weekend this weekend. Alabama, still in it, kind of.
Yeah, for sure.
So
I mean, we'll find out next week when they play LSU.
That's maybe an elimination game. So for whatever your outerwear needs are, your holiday needs are, or your college football needs are, get to yourself to Oak Hall this weekend. All right, Jeffrey, here we go. It's a smaller slate today. You are assembling it on the fly. Sometimes that's the best. What do we got?
All right, Jeff, we had a 6-5, or beg your pardon, we had a 5-6 week last week. I would like to say death to Oklahoma State, really. Oklahoma State, that one. And then Cincinnati giving up a Hail Mary at the end of the half. Those were the two big swing games. All right, Jeff, of course, Tuesday, a very big day. Maction returns. But more importantly, there will be an election on Tuesday, and we've got, in honor of that, Army and Air Force. Jeff, what do we always root for when the service academies play?
Army and Air Force, we root for the under, but this is a different Army team.
Yeah, we're getting 41 points. We're taking the under. Everybody knows it's a principal play. We're taking the under. Give me under 41.
Yeah, you know, this one hasn't worked that much because you did the same thing with Navy.
Jeff,
it's a different Navy team.
It lost once this year and it lost once last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Navy.
Come on.
Go ahead. Next.
And the Navy one was one score away. Like it was right there. Jeff, let's go to Fayetteville. Ole Miss, Arkansas. Ole Miss 7.5-point road favorites. We're not touching that. This, to me, just screams it's going to be the exact same game that Ole Miss has been playing in conference play, and almost every single one of those games goes under. I also think this will be a similar game to what Arkansas did with Tennessee, a game that was 19-14. Give me under 53.5.
All right, if you had to, what's the line here?
7.5.
What would you do?
The problem is, on a picks column earlier this week, I took Ole Miss, but I think now I've kind of talked myself into, I thought Arkansas was going to be very trendy, and it doesn't seem like Arkansas is all that trendy. I would probably lean to give me the points with.
What's your analysis of the actual football game?
I mean, the problem is, I don't know what Ole Miss's mental state is. I mean, you heard reports of, at the half last week, that there was a lot going on in the locker room, but then they came out and they played a really good half of football. I also think it's kind of a trap spot because Ole Miss, obviously, if they're going to get back into it, next week's the game, so it's kind of a look-ahead spot. But you could also tell me Ole Miss's defense is real and Arkansas.
Well, Ole Miss's defense is real.
Yeah.
Arkansas, this might be a get-right game for Jackson Dart, like a big numbered game for Jackson Dart.
I mean, it's possible, but the problem is Ole Miss still can't run the football. And part of the reason why Ole Miss is not really looking as explosive is because they can't run the football, they're not getting the quick strike like they're used to having.
The history is so, it also plays into
also, death, you know, dreams go to die for Ole Miss in Fayetteville.
All right, so that one, we're just doing the under 53.5. Next.
Jeff, Miami's head coach, the previous Miami head coach is now at Duke. And there's been lots of comparisons between Manny Diaz's record in between Mario Cristobal's record. I just think this is a Miami flex spot. They're going to be trying to get stats for Cam Ward. I'm going to lay the 20.5.
Florida's been solid lately.
I'm laying it with Miami.
Oh, I'm sorry. You are.
Yes.
Oh, I say you're.
I was close to putting Florida on the card here, but the number keeps shrinking, and I don't like the. I like it more than 17.
Florida's being close. I'm actually questioning your wisdom because
yes.
Florida has been solid lately. And is Miami a fraud? But tell me this: rank the teams in the ACC for me. Who do you like?
I think I'm going. I think I'm going Clemson, Miami, SMU, but I'm open to the idea that Clemson's just as fraudulent, because if you look at, like, when you really dig into, like, what Clemson's been doing, they've been winning big, but they've not really beaten anyone. So I'm still going to say I'm power ranking at Miami, Clemson, SMU.
Miami minus 20.5 over Florida. Next.
Jeff, we've got a top five matchup. Ryan Day, James Franklin. One of them legitimately has to win the game. So one of them's going to get a big win. Penn State's playing Ohio State. I know Ohio State's offensive line is banged up, but
they struggled with freaking Nebraska.
I'm viewing this a lot like the NFL. Who has to have it? I think Ohio State has to have it. It's only a field goal. I'll lay the field goal. Give me the Buckeyes.
Drew Aller's going to play, it feels like.
Drew Aller, it seems like, is going to play, but is he going to play well?
Is he going to play well? This next one, I was 100%. Mm-hmm. I called it earlier.
Yes,
this would be on your card.
Correct.
And you would be on this side of it on your card. Go ahead.
Yes, Jeff, this is our Kirkland Signature Champagne Game of the Week. Vanderbilt, 7.5-point underdog on the road against Auburn. Here's the deal. I know Diego's banged up. Diego's a gamer. I trust my guy. Auburn is a favorite. Has been terrible. Vanderbilt's not lost a game by more than a touchdown all year. Give me the 7.5.
And he's beaten them twice, right?
He's beaten Alabama and he's beaten Auburn.
Right, yeah. Vandy plus 7.5 over Auburn. Next.
Whoo, Jeff, we're going to go to the great state of Michigan.
Like,
and we are going to hold our nose twice. We're chasing the Indiana scalp. Yes, I know that this is probably a redo of Arizona all over again. I just think there's too much Indiana love. Yeah. Curtis Rourke coming back from thumb surgery.
He is coming back.
And
he
all of a sudden, back. He's just going to be 100% ready to go. Michigan State, tough place to play. Give me the 8. I'm not asking him to win, but give me the 8.
Michigan State plus 8. Returning. He's a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Rourke is a hero.
I
he's
do love
back
the Maple
from surgery.
I liked him more when he was at Ohio.
He's gotten
big time now.
Next.
Jeff, Oregon, Michigan. This is just our hold our nose. I think everybody thinks Oregon's just going to absolutely fillet them. Give me Michigan. Give me the 14.5, and I'll pray to God.
Because they're just going to grind it out.
Just hope. It's just everybody's on Oregon, and to me, this is just a hold your nose special.
Next.
Jeff, let's go to Ames, Iowa. Texas Tech coming in, very trendy underdog. Iowa State off a bye. I'm going to take the Cyclones to flex here. I'll lay the 13.5.
Iowa State minus 13.5 over Texas Tech. Next.
Jeff, this is the classic. Whatever you think makes no sense. Texas A&M, why are they only a 3-point favorite? I have no idea. I'll take South Carolina. Give me the 3.
It's an interesting matchup. South Carolina can rush the passer.
They can rush the passer.
And then create havoc and then create turnover.
They're not great in the back end. And they have a mobile quarterback who he looks like Joe Milton with goggles. This line makes no sense. I'm taking South Carolina.
I've never understood that logic. Go ahead, next.
Jeff, Texas, Tennessee kicks Kentucky's ass. We'll lay 17.
Kentucky's gone down the toilet since that Ole Miss game. Tennessee minus 17 over Kentucky. Next.
Jeff, we mentioned it. I just think everybody's all on Pitt right now, getting 7. SMU at home. I don't think SMU can play any worse than they did last week. 6 turnovers. They still got out of it. They still win the game. Jennings is going to play. I think they're going to be able to run the football. I think they're going to get more stops than Pitt. I'll lay the 7. Give me the Ponies.
All right, so what do we got here? I'll go through the card in a minute.
Okay.
Other games that we have not mentioned, Memphis UTSA.
Yeah.
What's the line there?
7.5.
And?
I thought about it with Memphis, but I don't know. They're not exactly covering right now in conference play.
They
haven't been filleting people. Now, I also think UTSA is not good.
They just got destroyed.
Yeah.
They just lost to Tulsa, for God's sakes.
They gave up 22 in the fourth quarter to lose to Tulsa, who might be one of the worst teams in all of college football.
How about Louisville, Clemson? How do you like that one?
I mean, it was the classic, this is everybody's on Clemson. Normally this is a spot I'd take Clemson. I don't trust Louisville to keep it close, so I just left it off.
All right. Anything else of interest? By the way, on the Cam Ward thing, talking about Miami, I have seen a bunch of mock drafts recently, some of which have him
ahead of Shador.
Yeah, and some of them have him going to the Giants.
I mean, it's a question to me. I want to know really how big he is. But do you think you can coach the bad out of Cam Ward? And I don't know, because there's a certain level of maybe you don't want to coach the bad out of Cam Ward because the bad is what gives you the amazing. I think I probably like Shador as a pure quarterback better, but I would like Cam Ward being the Giants quarterback better because I think some of Shador's antics don't really work. The calling out your offensive lineman and all that.
Will you be happy if Cam Ward ends up as a Giant?
Yeah.
You'd be very happy if he ends up as a Giant. Okay, let me go through the card here real quick. It is Air Force and Army under 41. Ole Miss, Arkansas under 53.5. Miami, Duke, it is Miami minus 20.5.
Yep.
Ohio State minus three over Penn State. Vandy plus 7.5 over Auburn. Michigan State plus 8 over Indiana. Iowa State minus 13.5 over Texas Tech. Michigan plus 14.5 over Oregon. South Carolina plus 3 over Texas A&M. Tennessee minus 17 over Kentucky. SMU minus 7 over Pittsburgh. We do, by the way, in addition to this next week's big.
Oh, yeah.
We got the election and we got the unveiling of the first bracket.
And Maction.
Real Maction, all of that.
We got unbridled Maction. Tuesday night Maction.
It's going to be a big day, a big week. All right, we're going to talk a little 9-1 FC when we return. Before then, I will remind you, it's Friday. This is Friday, and every Friday night, FanDuel is giving all customers a bigger payout on select NBA first bets. That means you can bet on things like who's going to score the first bucket, which team will be the first to 15 points, and so much more. You don't have to wait the whole game to see if you won. Just look for Friday first in the FanDuel app to find your profit boost. That's right. Profit boosts on Friday firsts over at FanDuel. FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. Opt-in required. Max wager amount applies. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including token expiration. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. Going to take a break. Talk to Caleb Sewell on the other side. Jeff Calkins, Show 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Caleb Sewell. He is the sporting director at 901 FC. Welcome, Caleb, to the show. I got a big match tomorrow at AutoZone Park.
That's right, guys. Thanks for having me. But yes, tomorrow going to be should be a good one.
So it's against Orange County, and it's 1 p.m. I gather you're giving away bucket hats. Is the promo? Big crowd would be appreciated. It is interesting to me. So much can change. Tim Howard can leave. You all can switch divisions. Maybe get off to a little bit of a slow start this year. And I look up, and once again, for the third straight year, hosting in the postseason. It says something about this team's, I don't know, ability to persevere or to it's remarkable. Things can change, but some things, glorious things, remain the same.
Yeah, well, listen, it's something that we're really proud of. You know, I think we only found this stat out the other day. I think we're the only club in the last 3-4 years that have been able to maintain a top four final positioning in the standings 3 consecutive years in a row. So for us, it's something that we're really proud of. There's much sort of bigger clubs, if you will, in the league, but we've sort of developed a culture here where we don't have any excuses and we want the boys just to crack on. And they've all bought in. And I think now we're starting to see the team peak at the right part of the season. And as you know, with any sport going into the playoffs, if you're on a good run of form and you haven't picked too early, you've got a chance.
And kind of remarkable, haven't lost at AutoZone Park. Can this possibly be true since April 20th?
That is correct. So it's something that we wanted to really make sure that was a forte of ours this year is our home form. If you looked at our team last year, I think we were the top two away from home teams that got the most points, and that was a forte of us last year. But we knew if we could get AutoZone to be sort of a fortress for us, then we'd go a long way, and we've managed to do that. So April 20-odd or whatever it was is when we last lost at home. So hopefully we can keep that train rolling this weekend and get some people in the stands and go on to the next round. And if we do that, we've got a chance to host again.
1 p.m. tomorrow at AutoZone Park. Bucket hats they're giving out at the door. And, yeah, it was April 20th, 13-match unbeaten streak at home. And this particular host, this the playoff run that you've been on here to cinch the home match is – it was not done easily, and it required a wildly successful road trip, a 1-0 win over Phoenix, and then a 3-2 win over New Mexico. Two very different matches, but it says a lot about this team that you could go on the road and win both of those.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, we felt disappointed that we put ourselves probably in a position not to be in the top four after the season that we had. We had a run of games in the beginning of the year where we were winless in five, and that right. didn't do us any favors. And then we probably dropped a few too many points from winning positions, whether that be down to a draw or a loss, where we shouldn't have done that through our own mistakes. So we're a little bit disappointed, but I guess the caveat from that being Phoenix won last year, so to go and play at their place and win is huge. And then we beat New Mexico away from home, who won the Western Conference this year. So both are considered playoff teams and playoff matches. So the fact that we're able to be out there, be competitive, and be in control, I think that gives us a lot of confidence. More importantly, it gives us a home game to come back and see where we go to. But yeah, we take a lot of pride in the results that we've had the last 2 weeks, and hopefully that gives the boys a lot of confidence heading into tomorrow's match.
A wild win over New Mexico. You just came out and jumped on them. And then they tied it up, and yet you were able to respond still after that.
My heart can't take many more of those, so if we could please stay clear of that, that would be good. I was up in the box watching, and I thought, scored, right, here we go, and then 1-1, and then you go 3-1, and then they come back, and they've hit the bar, and I went, man, I don't know if I'm made for this. But, no, it was a game where, at the end, we probably could have done a little bit better. But again, this is kind of how playoff games go, right? There's swings, and when the other team's got nothing to lose, they're going to push everybody forward and look for an equalizer or look for the go-ahead goal. So I think we dealt with that pretty well when all things are considered. So, yeah, we've had a good run here to get prepared for this game. So let's see how we go tomorrow. But, you know, we're quietly confident and hope for the best.
Quietly confident, but in the midst of this highly successful season, the two matches against Orange County, the one at home was close, and then, let's be honest, you got kind of your butt kicked out there. And I gather you've heard some celebrations from the locker room or whatnot. Like, is this a bit of a – what challenges does Orange County present, and what do you make of this match in view of what happened during the regular season?
Yeah, look, it's I think if you go back, especially the game away, and you look at the results, we gave away a penalty, we fall over, and we do all sorts of crazy things that you probably – don't normally see, and rightly so. They capitalize on our mistakes, and I think we shot ourselves in the foot really in that game. They've changed their coach, so when we played them last, they had a different head coach, so that's going to be different for them. They're equally in a good run of form, but you know, really the ethos for us is to worry about ourselves, and I think that's what we talk about. Don't beat ourselves. If we don't do that, we've got man for man just as good a squad as anyone in the league. So this week has been about preparing that we're on top, that we're in control. And I think, again, it doesn't really matter if they got a new coach or not. So long as we do what we do best, we believe we're going to have the best possible outcome. So we definitely respect them. We definitely know that they've got some firepower. But again, so do we. We're the team that scored the most goals in the West this year. So we equally feel confident about what we can do up top as well.
How's it been, by the way, negotiating life in the West as opposed to the East? Obviously, that's a change this year.
Yeah, it was, you know, we weren't sure how it was going to be. I think it's just going back in the time zones is not easy. And for these guys coming here, we have a 1 p.m. match. So that's going to be an early morning start for them back on their time. So just trying to navigate that. I think we are the team that's had the most air miles this year compared to where we are and going to the East versus the West. So, you know, we just tried to tell the boys, yeah, no excuses. We'll travel out. Some of these teams travel in. 2 days before the game. We're always going out a day before. We just get on with it. I think that's kind of the mood around the group is, yeah, we'll just crack on and nothing's too big of a challenge for us. But yeah, it hasn't been, I would say, easy, but nothing ridiculous neither. And we just try to steer the boys away from any thoughts about that.
Well, Caleb, you're gracious to join us. Sounds like it'll be a fun event tomorrow. Thanks so much and best of luck.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having us on.
Appreciate it. Caleb Sewell, that's tomorrow at AutoZone Park, 1 p.m. It is kind of amazing. Like when they came here, there was great fanfare.
Yeah.
Right? Great fanfare when they came here. And then there has been less fanfare of late, it feels like. But the truth of the matter is, through everything, they just keep winning. Like it has proven itself to be a really competitive, feisty franchise. They score a bunch. Whatever. Tim Howard can come and go. Like it, and he was obviously great in getting the franchise launched here. And they can move from east to west, and they just keep scoring and keep winning. And now they're hosting for the third straight year. So that'll be tomorrow at AutoZone Park. We got to wrap up here, Jeffrey. Did you see Bill Belichick's Halloween?
I did.
Extravaganza yesterday?
Yes.
How would you describe it to the people who haven't had the pleasure?
So his girlfriend is in a mermaid outfit, mm-hmm. and he's yes. like in the...
He's like in the fisherman, like the, yeah. like the Gordon's
the
fisherman.
Yellow, yeah. yellow, like the yellow... Yeah.
With a hat.
Yes, and he's just kind of got this
got
like
fishing pole.
Little smirk on his...
And he's pulling her. She's yeah. pulled up on the beach. Is that... It is interesting to see the comments... She posted on her yeah. IG account, right?
Yep.
And to me, it's interesting to see the comments. Half the comments are gross. Because let's be honest, what is she, 19?
No, like, I think she's like 24 or 25,
whatever.
Something like that.
Okay. And half the comments are literally gross. And half the comments are, nice. This is awesome, living your best life, sense of humor.
This is crushing retirement.
Whatever else, this is crushing retirement.
Now, the real question is, do you see his ex-fiancés? His Halloween costume.
His ex-fiance.
Yeah, Linda something. She went as the bride from Kill Bill. That felt kind of targeted.
Does the fact that he's doing this mean he's never going to coach again? He's having fun being on
so
the Manning cast.
He is enjoying it. I still think he wants the record. But the other thing that I've noticed is he's been much more critical of like the league and of owners. And to me, like, if you're really trying to get a job, you're not really playing that game.
What intrigues you most in the NFL this weekend? Is there anything leap out at you this weekend in the NFL?
I mean, I think it's do the Colts look better with Flacco?
Well, that's true. You know what I really want? I want the Browns to keep winning.
Browns
got the Chargers. I'm on the let's humiliate the Haslams and
yeah.
Haslam and the Browns for their insane choice they made to continue to play. Foisting him on the city, on the league, everything else. And so I hope Jameis continues to roll.
And I mean, if Jordan Love plays, Detroit at Green Bay is going to be an absolute thriller.
That's a wild one, yeah. All right, we will be back on Monday, but what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Big show for them. Rob Fisher joins them at 11:25. Jeff Borzello going to join them at 12:25. Anthony Sain at 1:25. Blake Topmeyer will join us at 2:30 on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back on Monday for Now Work is Done.